So, I began recording. We are
Would you first give us the
not.
sequence?
Yes. Okay. On my screen, I see from the left to the right, clockwise, Matteo, me, Geoffrey, and you, Andrea. Should we go according to this order? Is it okay?
Where are we?
Chapter 4, The System of Yoga, page 31.
Okay, so I'll begin with the first paragraph. Part 1, The Conditions of the Synthesis, Chapter 4, The Systems of Yoga. These relations between the different psychological divisions of the human being and these various utilities and objects of effort founded on them, such as we have seen them in our brief survey of the natural evolution, we shall find repeated in the fundamental principles and methods of the different schools of yoga. And if we seek to combine and harmonize their central practices and their predominant aims, we shall find that the basis provided by nature is still our natural basis and the condition of their synthesis.
Okay, if there are other questions, we should go. Okay, I go ahead. In one respect, yoga exceeds the normal operation of cosmic nature and climbs beyond her. For the aim of the Universal Mother is to embrace the divine in her own play and creations and there to realize it. But in the highest flights of yoga, she reaches beyond herself and realizes the divine in itself, exceeding the universe and even standing apart from the cosmic play. Therefore, by some it is supposed that this is not only the highest but also the one true or exclusively preferable object of yoga.
Would you read that paragraph again?
Should I go again? Should I read again? Yeah, okay. In one respect, yoga exceeds the normal operation of cosmic nature and climbs beyond her. For the aim of the Universal Mother is to embrace the divine in her own play and creations and there to realize it. But in the highest flights of yoga, she reaches beyond herself and realizes the divine in itself, exceeding the universe and even standing apart from the cosmic play. Therefore, by some it is supposed that this is not only the highest, but also the one true or exclusively preferable object of yoga.
So that would be the one exceeding the universe and even standing apart from the cosmic play. Do I understand that correctly?
So he's being a bit critical of his ideas to of moving beyond the physical into these higher realms and forgetting the other stuff, I guess.
Oh, that's the opposite of what I read.
No, but he's saying
you two are saying
almost supposed. So he's sort of saying, I think he's sort of preparing the world to say it doesn't have to be that way, right?
How I read it is that he says that this is a realization of yoga, also of integral yoga, but we should not stop there. So yes, I think it's probably what you mean, that we should not fly away from the material existence. We should realize this universal cosmic transcendent, but we should not consider it the highest object of yoga.
Or the exclusive object of yoga.
Or the?
That's the exclusively.
Or the exclusive, yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. That's what I, in the last session, I hinted at when I spoke about the non-dual realization and the distinction between non-dual realization and with integral yoga, that the non-dualists tend to go also only to realize this cosmic transcendent, but not more. Whereas Sri Aurobindo says we should go, this should not be the only and the exclusive realization. There should be something also more. And that's why he also says that I don't know where it is, but he said somewhere, our yoga begins there where the other yogas finish, stop, terminate. Yeah. So I think it's this idea that he's writing his paragraph.
Yet it is always through something which he has formed in her evolution, that nature thus overpasses her evolution. It is the individual heart that by sublimating its highest and purest emotions attains to the transcendent bliss or the ineffable nirvana. The individual mind that by converting its ordinary functions into a knowledge beyond mentality knows its oneness with the ineffable and merges its separate existence in that transcendent unity. I'm going to start over because I got lost.
Thank you.
Yet it is always through something which she has formed in her evolution that nature thus overpasses her evolution. It is the individual heart that by sublimating its highest and purest emotions attains to the transcendent bliss or the ineffable nirvana. The individual mind that by conceiving its ordinary functions into a knowledge beyond mentality knows its oneness with the ineffable and merges its separate existence in that transcendent unity. And always it is the individual, the self-conditioned in its experience by nature and working through her formations, that attains to the self unconditioned, free and transcendent.
Jeffrey, if I may say, I appreciate your honesty. I was very lost too. And you often say stuff like that and repeat when I'm like completely lost and you're like, I'm going to start again. So I just appreciate that. And then do we all see the bhakti, jnana, karma, yoga in here? The starting with the heart, the bhakti, and then going to the mind, the individual mind. And I love this because this is the true definition of jnana. I get, maybe I'm a broken record around this, but I hear this all the time. Oh, that person's a jnana yogi. They just like reading books. Reading books and book knowledge is not jnana yoga. Jnana yoga is this specifically. A knowledge beyond mentality knows its oneness with the ineffable. That knowledge of the oneness is the core of jnana yoga. And then he transitions to experience, the self-conditioned in its experience. This is karma yoga, but not cleaning the back of the refrigerator or sweeping underneath the rug. but something a lot deeper, the experience by nature and working through her formation. So it's us becoming the instrumentality, right? There's basically, it's back up to that first paragraph where the tri-yoga is being synthesized, actually. And it ties in with the first paragraph because he's getting to the last sentence of the first paragraph where he's seeking to combine and harmonize the central practices, not saying that we need to become experts of all these individual yogas, but to aspire, his suggestion anyway, is to aspire to working with the synthesis of these practices. And that's kind of my, I don't know, my summary of these first three paragraphs.
Okay. In practice, three conceptions are necessary before there can be any possibility of yoga. There must be, as it were, three consenting parties to the effort: God, nature, and the human soul. Or in more abstract language, the transcendental, the universal, and the individual. If the individual and nature are left to themselves, the one is bound to the other and unable to exceed appreciably her lingering march. Something transcendent is needed, free from her and greater, which will act upon us and her, attracting us upward to itself and securing from her by good grace or by force her consent to the individual ascension. Wow, by good grace or by force? Okay. That's unexpected.
Sometimes I have the experience of being forced into a realization, like my separate self is kicking and screaming with this particular bit of work. And then, and I sense this is a human experience. I'm like kicking and screaming. I don't want to do this. What's the point of all of this? I can't make sense of it. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm like, but I can't say no to it, right? There's a magnet that won't allow me to pull myself away from it. And then all of a sudden this like breakthrough epiphany moment comes where I'm like, oh my God, that's why I was doing that. And then that always, there's no end to that. That always leads to something else. But that sometimes I do feel forced into this. And I love this, that he brings in, so he's following the tri-yoga with the transcendent, universal, and individual, talking about the circuitry. Not even, yoga is not even happening unless these three forces are yoked to each other. Otherwise, we're just going the pace of nature. And that's the whole thing, is this is a call to exceed the pace of nature. And to explore the possibility of that. Any other comments? Questions? Quid pro quos? Petitions?
No petition.
Well, I'm not even sure I want to say it, but I get the transcendent pulls from another place, but I think I still have trouble with this idea of upward. So as a metaphor, it's okay. I don't mind the metaphor. It's just
use a metaphor.
Well, what if we don't use the metaphor? What if we go with something super tangible and talk in terms of heliocentric and geocentric? Maybe upward and downward don't work for you, but the sun, I don't know. There's never a point where I say the sun is down there, right? And there's this, the transcendent, there's this, like, I know the sun is within the cosmos. So again, we're being symbolic, but there is this, there is this heliocentric and geocentric pole. Or, I don't know. Is it possible that...
Maybe a kind of analogy to the Christian resonances, because in the Christian world, upward has to do with paradise and the heavens and down, you know, and that whole association, I'm not saying that's here, but it's something that I'm slightly allergic to.
I hear you, Jeffrey. Yes.
Yes.
I was raised by the evangelicals. Onward, onward, Christian soldiers marching unto thee.
So I just mentioned it, but it's not a big thing. I'm not.
Thank you that you said this, because I was all the time trying to wonder where this comes, because I noticed this not only in you but also in many other people, and I never. But my understanding at the end of the story, how I see it, that there is no upward, no downward, because everything is one. Everything is a divine in with different masks.
Yeah.
You can say so. Yeah. Also, the devil is the divine with the mask of the devil. And also, a saint is a divine with the mask of a saint. So this maybe, perhaps, I don't know, but at the end, from the supramental point of view, Sri Aurobindo describes this, it's what you see. Everything is divine, everything is one. So these distinctions between high and lower fade away. If you like to see it from this point of perspective, it's okay.
You're being such a Jnana yogi, Marco.
Unfortunately, I am too much a Jnana yogi.
But see, that's the definition of mentality. Yeah, I know you're mental, but the Jnana yogi is working through that mentalizing into the oneness. And all I was hearing from you is the oneness. That's why I said that, not because you were mentalizing.
Yeah, one tries also to get a bit of the higher mind, so to speak, no? Tip into a little bit, at least.
Well, why are we doing this, huh?
Yeah, it's essential to pass through into intuitive states, which is it seems like what's becoming of us is more and more into access, more and more access to intuitive mind. Is it my? I think it's my turn to read. Yeah. Okay. Is any more comments, questions? No. Petitions. Thanks for the petition, Jeffrey. That was lovely. Oh, help me out. Which paragraph do I start with here? For the contact. It is the truth. Thank you, Jeffrey. It is this truth which makes necessary. It is this truth which makes necessary to every philosophy of yoga the conception of the Ishwara, Lord, Supreme Soul, or Supreme Self, towards whom the effort is directed and who gives the illuminating touch and the strength to attain. Equally true is the complementary idea so often enforced by the yoga of devotion, that as the transcendent is necessary to the individual and sought after by him, so also the individual is necessary, in a sense, to the transcendent and sought after by it. If the bhakta seeks and yearns after Bhagavan, Bhagavan also seeks and yearns after the bhakta. Footnote 1. Bhakta, the devotee or lover of God. Bhagavan, God, the Lord of love and delight. The third term of the Trinity is Bhagavat, the divine revelation of love. There can be no yoga of knowledge without a human seeker of knowledge, the supreme subject of knowledge, and the divine use by the individual of the universal faculties of knowledge. No yoga of devotion without the human God lover, the supreme object of love and delight, and the divine use by the individual of the universal faculties of spiritual, emotional, and aesthetic enjoyment. No yoga of works without the human worker, the supreme will, master of all works and sacrifices, and the divine use by the individual of the universal faculties of power and action. However monistic may be our intellectual conception of the highest truth of things, in practice, we are compelled to accept this omnipresent Trinity.
So the Trinity here is this knowledge, devotion, and works. Is that what we're...
That's the tri-yoga. Yeah, the Trinity is the transcendent, the cosmic, and the individual, right? The individual utilizing the universal to manifest the transcendent. Right, and it depends. And there's three threes going on here. Yeah, he's basically synthesizing the previous two paragraphs with the transcendent, universal, and individual with the yoga of bhakti, the yoga of jnana, the yoga of karma, right? Love, knowledge of oneness, and work, action.
To me, it describes exactly as Schrömiller sees the whole purpose of the creation, is the supreme manifesting itself to know itself. And we are the instruments of that knowing. So without, it's like without us, he or she does not exist.
Yeah, I love that. Agreed.
Marco?
Okay. For the contact of the human and individual consciousness with the divine is the very essence of yoga. Yoga is a union of that which has become separated in the play of the universe with its own true self, origin, and universality. The contact may take place at any point of the complex and intricately organized consciousness, which we call our personality. It may be effected in the physical through the body, in the vital through the action of those functionings which determine the state and the experiences of our nervous being, through the mentality, whether by means of the emotional heart, the active will, or the understanding mind, or more largely by a general conversion of the mental consciousness in all its activities. It may equally be accomplished through a direct awakening to the universal or transcendent truths and bliss by the conversion of the central ego in the mind. And according to the point of contact that we chose will be the type of the yoga that we practice.
So, Marco, I hope you don't mind if I mention in English the word is transcendent. There's no
transcendent.
Not yes. Transcendent. It's transcendent.
Transcendent. Yes. Thank you. And there are certainly many, many more words to
sure
we can begin from that. Yes. Trans-
And we're all learning. Jeffrey corrected my English the other day. What was the word, Jeffrey, that Americans add an extra consonant to?
Plenitude. So they say plentitude, and it's not. It's plenitude. I noticed Jonathan did it the other day in our beta as well. It's very common.
Oh, and he's Canadian, yeah. So it's not maybe not just American.
So I'm struggling with this last part of the last line of that paragraph. According to the point of contact that we choose will be the type of the yoga that we practice.
Ah, yeah.
It could also be said, and according to the point of contact, how we are chosen. It's like where the connection is made between the individual and the divine. I don't think it's necessarily a point of our choice. It happens, right? It happens either when we read or we are having some transcendent experience, emotionally, physically, that happens. It's, to me, I call that a grace. So, but that would then be the place where we start to follow the thread, right? To want to more, have more of that.
So we don't really understand the three yogas. I'm not very far advanced in this thing.
Oh my goodness, Jeffrey, there's whole sections coming up. This is the conditions of the synthesis. There's going to be a 25 chapter section on the yoga of divine works, another 30 chapter section on the yoga of knowledge, and then following that the yoga of love. So this is all it's okay.
Matthew, yeah. You sort of pointed the finger at Marco and you said, oh, you're Jana. But where do you fit, Matthew?
No, so
where does Andrea fit? I'm just curious where you see yourselves fitting in this structure.
I want to clarify, I was joking with Marco. He was talking about oneness. Yeah. Yeah.
Matteo's a real Purna yogi.
Oh my God. I don't know about that claim, Marco, but that's my aspiration. Yeah. To be working on all three of these lines, as well as with Hatha yoga and, you know, but that's the aspiration, is to be an integral yogi. I can't make any claims that that's me, but I see misdefinitions around these three yogas all the time, where groups within our community are like, okay, now it's time for karma yoga. But that's not, that's the really super essentially simplified misdefinition of karma yoga is let's go pull weeds in the garden. Yeah, I chop wood and I do all of that stuff, but I don't know. Karma, we can get back to the higher simplified definition of these three to talk about where we're interfacing. But my personal aim is to be a Purna yogi, to be an integral yogi. And however, like back to Andrea's statement also, this is a beautiful statement. It's the statement that she just made regarding how we are chosen. It's commenting on our essential self of being. There's some among us that they're just like everything is a beautiful devotion and a calling on the grace of the Divine Mother, and that's their practice, and there's a temperament for that, and that can't be divided out from the realization of oneness. That can't be separated out from the work that's in the world that has to be done without attachment to the outcome of that work, and not having that work be based on our desires and preferences. So there's all this interweaving here. And on Andrea's point, it's like Sri Aurobindo has said what Andrea said in many different ways. And one way is him advising us to work with the part of our being that is most receptive. And that can be in our body. I would say if the receptivity is coming from the heart chakra, I would call that a bhakti movement, a devotional movement. I would say if it's coming from the third eye, that might be a jhana movement. If it's coming from chopping wood and carrying water and pulling weeds in the garden, it may be the lower vital that's the power and will behind that to do our manifestation. So it's super complicated, Jeffrey, and I don't identify with one of those three.
But chopping wood, that is Sativan, no? Sativan is Savitri. So you see,
hope I don't fall down in the forest and don't have my Savitri isn't here. She's in Panama. Maybe a neighbor will find me. Oh man, sorry to ruin the story for you, Jeffrey.
Sativan. Kind of in joke here. Huh? There's an in joke going on.
Oh, Sachivan dies and Savitri follows him into death and does battle with death. That's the and he dies while he's chopping wood.
But I was more thinking at the chopping, not at the dying. So don't take it personally. I have always this image of Sativan chopping the wood. Also before, but...
I was also struck reading this sentence, and according to the point of contact, that we will be the type of yoga that we practice. If I've just been reading, Andrea just sent me her text from collaboration about this trip to India, and there's a passage in there where you describe you sort of first divine experience, contact, whatever. I was reminded of it reading this, you know, this sort of.
Responding to your question, for me, I think mine definitely started in the heart as a bhakti. That would be my first identification because it started with the identification with the mother. And then the karma yoga came immediately following that. So that was in, those two were very infused for me. And if I look at this, I think that participating in these readings together and discussing this is my development of the jnana yoga. It's not my first approach. My first approach is through the heart and service. Yeah, so I'm very happy to be here with you all. Get around it.
Love that.
Yeah, but in fact, I also appreciated very much what you said, Andrea, that we are chosen according to one or the other point of contact. I believe this very much because, in fact, even Sri Aurobindo and Mother would say Sri Aurobindo was more the point of contact of the jnana yoga yogi. Mother more and karma yoga, and mother more the bhakti yogini. This doesn't mean that we can also then develop also the other, as you are already saying now. Yeah, you are now developing this jnana yoga aspect, and every one of us. I'm also more the jnana and not very much the bhakti. There, I have to work on that. Yes, in fact. So, but there is probably a reason why we are chosen according to one or the other point of contact. And this, I see it a little bit, the synthesis of years is coming up, at least for me, because in the previous chapter, and also before, we read about the threefold life, it's about the condition of the synthesis. And it is a synthesis which sees the mental, the vital, and the physical. And the three points of contact, I think, are these. Or three or more, maybe, because there is also the spiritual. No? And if the point of contact is a physical, it is more the Hatha yogi, probably. Yeah? and karma yogi. If the point of contact is vital, it is the bhakti yogi. If the point of contact is the mind or the spiritual mind, intuitive mind, it is more the jnani yogi, jnana yogi. And everyone, there's this grace that probably chooses one point, because perhaps one or the other aspect is better developed in us, and then it sticks there. So the grand vision here is this mental, vital, and physical that must be developed integrally, beginning by one point of contact, which then goes also to the others. So I'm sorry, this is your Jnana Yogi again, but okay.
Is it my turn to read? For if, leaving aside the complexities of their particular processes, we fix our regard on the central principle of the chief schools of yoga still prevalent in India, we find that they arrange themselves in an ascending order, which starts from the lowest rung of the ladder, the body, and descends to the direct contact between the individual soul and the transcendent and universal self. Hatha yoga selects the body and the vital functionings as its instruments of perfection and realization. Its concern is with the gross body. Raja yoga, is that right? Or is it Raya yoga? Raja yoga selects the mental being in its different parts as its lever power. It concentrates on the subtle body. The triple path of works of love and of knowledge uses some part of the mental being, will, heart, or intellect as a starting point, and seeks by its conversion to arrive at the liberating truth, the attitude and infinity, which are the nature of the spiritual life. Its method is a direct commerce between the human purusha, individual body, and the divine purusha who dwells in every body and yet transcends all form and name. I need to sort of... So this last bit is a bit of a struggle for me.
So the Purusha is the name that is used here for the divine. So it is the divine who dwells in everybody. And then the divine Purusha who transcends all form. So it is the same, but the one is individualized and the other is universal. But it is the Purusha recognizing itself, realizing itself, right, in us.
Okay. And Raja Yoga, I'm not familiar with Raja Yoga.
Raja means king. It's called the King Yoga.
Yeah.
It is the development of the jnana, I think, Matteo. Yeah. It reminds me of Ashwapati. He is the king, and the first books where his own yoga is described is called the Yoga of the King. And in my understanding, he is really going after understanding everything,
right.
Seeing and understanding the whole thing, which would be the Raja Yoga, the Yoga of the King, if okay. I'm not mistaken.
That helps.
No, that's good, Andrea. Yeah, often in modern 2020 parlance or kind of coming to America, it became synonymous. It's synonymous with the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the eightfold yoga path that's detailed in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. There's very specific methods and practices, and it's the mentalized form. And in this, he brings in a bunch of terms, which in this paragraph, and he's like rolling out his synthesis, putting Hatha Yoga as a physical and vital yoga, Raja Yoga is the, and working on the gross body, Raja Yoga is mental and working on the subtle body, and then the Tri Yoga as using all three in contact with the, like what Andrea said, the individualized form of the Godhead inside of all of us and the cosmic Godhead of that, the Purusha.
So is the last bit what you would call integral yoga then, this Tri?
No, we're not there yet. he's rolling out a synthesis. Yes, oftentimes it gets thought that, but it's deeper than that. It's what he's synthesizing, these five things, right? Hatha, Raja, love, works, and knowledge. Yeah, he's synthesizing it.
I guess patience, right? we'll get there. Hatha Yoga aims at the conquest of the life and the body, whose combination in the food sheath and the vital vehicle constitutes, as we have seen, the gross body, and whose equilibrium is the foundation of all nature's workings in the human being. The equilibrium established by nature is sufficient for the normal egoistic life. It is insufficient for the purpose of the Hatha Yogin, for it is calculated on the amount of vital or dynamic force necessary to drive the physical engine during the normal span of human life and to perform more or less adequately the various workings demanded of it by the individual life inhabiting this frame and the world environment by which it is conditioned. Hatha Yoga therefore seeks to rectify nature and establish another equilibrium by which the physical frame will be able to sustain the inrush of an increasing vital or dynamic force of prana, indefinite, almost infinite in its quantity or intensity. I'm going to read that again.
Yeah, we could pause after you read it again.
Okay. Hatha Yoga, therefore, seeks to rectify nature and establish another equilibrium by which the physical frame will be able to sustain the inrush of an increasing vital or dynamic force of prana, indefinite, almost infinite in its quantity or intensity. You want me to stop there?
Yeah, if I may share a bit. So when yoga first started for me, I saw this pattern developing where I would feel like an open channel, like the really this force pulsating through my body. And then there was clearly this point all the time that I hit where I sensed it as fear coming in, and it would like physically block this force coming through, this force that was like working through me. Like I felt the force wanting to work on my physical, wanting to expand my mind, wanting to make my vital system stronger. And there's this fear that came in. I think it was an existential fear that would come in and put a kibosh on the force, basically like stop the whole flow. And there were other things going on with me too, like alcohol and like all these other things that were in the mix also. And then because he's addressing Hatha Yoga, all that stuff kind of like, I don't even know how to put it. It sort of, something did its work, something processed through. And I guess what I want to share is right now I use Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga is a practice for me, and I feel like it's like strengthens the vehicle and helps purify the channels in order to be able to be a stronger vessel for whatever force is trying to move me. And I don't know. I'm sure we all have experiences that are similar to this. So I just wanted to kind of stop there and share those two things.
In nature, the equilibrium is based upon the individualization of a limited quantity and force of the prana. More than that, the individual is by personal and hereditary habit unable to bear, use, or control. In Hatha Yoga, the equilibrium opens a door to the universalization of the individual vitality by admitting into the body, containing, using, and controlling a much less fixed and limited action of the universal energy. Right, so it makes a more competent vehicle of the physical body, right? To establish and manifest the divine.
So I'm just thinking about kind of silly, obvious maybe, but like if I go, you know, if I look up on the community centers in the area where I live, there are a number of courses which announce themselves as yoga courses, but they're obviously Hatha Yoga in a sense. Or something related, right?
Probably. Oftentimes more and more a fusion of a lot of different things. But probably if it's asanas and pranayama in a group, that can be classified as Hatha Yoga. That is Hatha Yoga. And then there's all these different branches and schools.
But they don't talk about the larger yogas very much. You know, it's very focused on a set of exercises. Physical practices.
It's closer to our regular reality, right? It doesn't talk about transcending our regular consciousness, really.
No, it doesn't even talk about this idea of intensifying the experience of the individual. It just talks about relaxing often. It's just about some sort of technique for relaxation and...
Right, and opening and strengthening and... Yeah, it's the essence of yoga, the union with the divine, is rarely discussed.
Yeah. Super rarely, except I'm friends with all my yoga teachers and you know, out of the classroom and off the mats, they have their own practice that's not, it comes through, it does. It's just, they're also playing the game of, I have this room in front of me, this grouping of 10 to 25 people in front of me. And I'm talking about my friends who are yoga instructors. I've had these conversations with them where they're trying to figure out where the room is and what they can let through and let in also. So there's all sorts of things playing around in these spaces.
But the other thing about these yoga classes or whatever practices I have never ever in any of these classes, and I've taken a few of them over the years, ever heard anything about the Vedas. But it's all part of the same thing. It's not cut off from in its roots, you know. So there's this very odd way of integrating all of this into this sort of
You're looking at bringing a practice to the larger humanity, right? And not everybody is interested in pursuing that further. You know, we are, and the numbers of people wanting to go beyond that get smaller and smaller. Yeah. So for the public, that is not even really appropriate, or, yeah.
But I mean, it seems to me, I mean, you know, I haven't always been, you know, so wrapped up in spiritual issues as I am these days, but I've always been interested. And I think if some of this background material was offered in a class, I would have lapped it up. But it's never offered. It's never given. You know, it's like there's a disconnect in the system between the knowledge that's behind what's going on in these classes and what actually takes place. You know? Even as you say, Matteo, some of the teachers have a more integral approach in what in their personal space. It doesn't come through into the classroom.
Have you encountered the Philip Goldberg book yet, American Veda?
No.
It's a little masterpiece. It's a page turner. It's really hard to stop reading. I've only had one pass through it, and I think he writes like a reporter, so it's really amazing and so well written. But anyway, he actually addresses this in a really beautiful way, in a loving and open way, where, you know, this is just this is the interplay and the cracks getting the cracks. He actually shows a history of the so-called transcendentalists actually reactivating the Veda in India, like Thoreau, Whitman, and Emerson really having an effect, right? Emerson wrote that poem called Brahma or Brahman, I can't remember. And there was a reinfusion of interest in the Veda in India. We think of India as this mega monolith that has had continuous practice on these lines, but there's been a dance back and forth. And what we're commenting on is really just like an aspect of yoga, and it focused on certain people's particular interests with it, and the bodily health is something that I guess I bless the delusion, if we want to call it that. Like you're talking about it being cut off from its roots, I don't see it that way. I just see it as like a root system that's grown out really far, and sprouts are coming up over here. And over time, this is actually huge in a lot of ways. I have strange experiences because I see Mexico over time. I lived in Mexico in 1998 in Mexico City. No yoga, not a single yoga school. And all of a sudden, like yoga schools popping up everywhere throughout Latin America. And, you know, this happened in America. Santa Cruz just happened to be it's a hub of this stuff. So the teachers that we have here are a lot different than the general yoga teacher in Santa Cruz is infusing a lot more stuff. Whereas the general yoga teacher, from what I've heard from friends that live in the Midwest, it's not that at all, but I see this root has grown out and sprouts coming up, and those sprouts coming up are, you know, we're only capable of kind of, we're trying to grow faster, which is what this is all about. But at the same time, we're also confronted with the pace of nature. And that's kind of why I'm using this root system and sprout analogy. And I think what we're commenting on is just those little sprouts that are coming up off of the extended tendrils. But it's growing, and it's growing faster and faster. And I'm seeing more and more people becoming a lot more interested in the depths, I think, which is why I've befriended all my yoga teachers. They've also befriended me, because they're like, wow, what the hell is this, more or less? And they've all had their own practices and experiences, but we offer different things to each other, growing together. Does that help at all, or?
That helps a lot, Matteo. I'm just struggling to sort of make sense out of this weird, whatever. I don't know if it's weird, but
I mean, what's weird, we're also kind of sub-commenting on the commodification of yoga and yoga journal, the buxom blonde sitting on the California cliff with the perfect, perfect body doing the asanas. Like, there's all that, the commodification around it. And, you know, but in a weird way, that commodification helps the sprouting, that wealth and the abundance around it in some ways helps surrounding. And then people that are deeper in this stuff sometimes have this look on that with a scoffing, like, I'm better than that person that's practicing yoga over there with their practice. There's all sorts of things going on here. A friend of mine calls this phenomenon the "that's not barbecue" phenomenon. He's a writer also, where the person in Alabama is like, oh, that those people in Mississippi, that ain't barbecue. And the people in Mississippi are like, the ones in Texas, that they don't know how to barbecue, that ain't barbecue. We have this phenomenon that happens in the global yoga community also, where people are looking at the other people's practices and saying, that's not yoga. And I like to kind of turn that around on its head and kind of just talk about roots and sprouts, and people are growing at the pace that they're able to grow at, and people are approaching it. Back to Andrea's comment, that person, this fictitious person, symbolic person in Omaha, Nebraska, who's 80 years old and just taking up their yoga practice because it's never too old to stretch and strengthen, they're being touched by something that is like, I don't know, it's super precious to me, and it's precious to my heart. There's a lot going on here. And it's one of Sri Aurobindo's five dreams. If we look back on his August 15th, 1947 speech that was delivered on All India Radio, this spread of yoga across the globe was one of his five dreams for the transformation of the planet. And it happens slow sometimes and comes in strange and funny forms. Okay, I'm done with my rant or whatever that was.
Wonderful. Thank you. It was nice to see you catch fire. Is it my turn? Did you just read, Jeffrey?
Yes, it's your turn. I think, okay. Yes.
Thank you. So we are the chief processes of Hatha Yoga, is that where we are? Okay. The chief processes of Hatha Yoga are asana and pranayama. By its numerous asanas or fixed postures, it first cures the body of that restlessness, which is a sign of its inability to contain, without working them off in action and movement, the vital forces poured into it from the universal life ocean, gives to it an extraordinary health, force, and suppleness, and seeks to liberate it from the habits by which it is subjected to ordinary physical nature and kept within the narrow bounds of her normal operations. Wow, what a sentence. Shall I do it again? The chief processes of Hatha Yoga are asana and pranayama. By its numerous asanas or fixed postures, it first cures the body of that restlessness, which is a sign of its inability to contain, without working them off in action and movement, the vital forces poured into it from the universal life ocean, gives to it an extraordinary health, force, and suppleness, and seeks to liberate it from the habits by which it is subjected to ordinary physical nature and kept within the narrow bounds of her normal operations. In the ancient tradition of Hatha Yoga, it has always been supposed that this conquest could be pushed so far even as to conquer to a great extent the force of gravitation. By very subsidiary but elaborate processes of the Hatha Yoga next contrives to keep the body free from all impurities and the nervous system unclogged for those exercises of respiration which are his most important instruments. These are called pranayama, the control of the breath or the vital power. For breathing is the chief physical functioning of the vital forces. Pranayama for the Hatha yogin serves a double purpose. First, it completes the perfection of the body. The vitality is liberated from many of the ordinary necessities of physical nature. Robust health, prolonged youth, often an extraordinary longevity are attained. On the other hand, pranayama awakens the coiled up serpent of the pranic dynamism in the vital sheath and opens to the yogin fields of consciousness, ranges of experience, abnormal faculties denied to the ordinary human life, while it puissantly intensifies such normal powers and faculties as he already possesses. These advantages can be farther secured and emphasized by other subsidiary processes open to the Hatha yogin.
It's my turn. I can't remember.
Yes, it's, it would be your turn.
Any comments or anything? No, good. Okay. The results of Hatha Yoga are thus striking to the eye and impose easily on the vulgar or physical mind. And yet, at the end, we may ask what we have gained. And yet, at the end, we may ask what we have gained at the end of all this stupendous labor. The object of physical nature, the preservation of the mere physical life, its highest perfection, even in a certain sense, the capacity of a greater enjoyment of physical living have been carried out on an abnormal scale. But the weaknesses of Hatha Yoga is that its laborious and difficult processes make so great a demand on the time and energy and impose so complete a severance from the ordinary life of men that the utilization of the results for the life of the world becomes either impracticable or is extraordinarily restricted. If in return for this loss, we gain another life in another world within the mental, the dynamic, these results could have been acquired through other systems, through Raja Yoga, through Tantra, by much less laborious methods and held on much less exacting terms. On the other hand, the physical results, increased vitality, prolonged youth, health, longevity, are of small avail if they must be held by us as misers of ourselves. Apart from the common life, for their own sake, not utilized, not thrown into the common sum of the world's activities. Hatha Yoga attains large results, but at an exorbitant price and to very little purpose. That can trigger a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, quite.
Yeah.
I was just thinking as you were reading that and about the earlier discussion that, in a way, the different yogas are like the different Vedic gods. In the same way that the Vedic gods represent or are expressions of one god, so the different yogas are expressions of one yoga. And so the West, which tends to break up the yogas into this kind of yoga and that kind of yoga, is just like the breaking up the gods into this god and that god, which is not the right approach, right? Which is not the source. Anyway, just an awareness of that.
I love this analogy. I love this. This is a Jnana yoga, yogi analogy, I think. Because you see the one, and then, however, the different aspects of the one. But I think it's not only the West. I think he is also referring to India here. Also in the Indian culture, it was at least, but it is still, I think, divided still. And he tries to just show us this synthesis in this sense. These yogas are the different aspects of the yoga of nature, so to speak, if we understand us part of nature. So I proceed. Raja Yoga takes a higher flight. It aims at the liberation and perfection not of the bodily, but of the mental being, the control of the emotional and sensational life, the mastery of the whole apparatus of thought and consciousness. It fixes its eyes on the citta, that stuff of mental consciousness in which all these activities arise. And it seeks even a hatha yoga, as hatha yoga, with its physical material, first to purify and to tranquilize. The normal state of man is a condition of trouble and disorder, a kingdom either at war with itself or badly governed. For the Lord, the Purusha, is subjected to his ministers, the faculties, subjected even to his subjects, the instruments of sensation, emotion, action, enjoyment. I will reread this sentence. The normal state of man is a condition of trouble and disorder, a kingdom either at war with itself or badly governed. For the Lord, the Purusha, is subjected to his ministers, the faculties, subjected even to his subjects, the instruments of sensation, emotion, action, enjoyment. Svaraja, self-rule, must be substituted for this subjection. First, therefore, the powers of order must be helped to overcome the powers of disorder. The preliminary movement of Raja Yoga is a careful self-discipline by which good habits of mind are substituted for the lawless movements that indulge the lower nervous being. By the practice of truth, by renunciation of all forms of egoistic seeking, by abstention from injury to others, by purity, by constant meditation and inclination to the divine Purusha, who is the true Lord of the mental kingdom, a pure, glad, clear state of mind and heart is established.
This is straight out of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the citta, the yamas and niyamas. It's all kind of detailed in the first part of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which a lot of times people, when you're hearing talking about the Eightfold Path of Yoga, it's referring to that. I hear a lot of this from yoga instructors in classes.
Should I keep going? This is the first step only. Afterwards, the ordinary activities of the mind and sense must be entirely quieted in order that the soul may be free to ascend to higher states of consciousness and acquire the foundation for a perfect freedom and self-mastery. But Raja Yoga does not forget that the disabilities of the ordinary mind proceed largely from its subjection to the reactions of the nervous system and the body. It adopts, therefore, from the Hatha Yoga system, its devices of asana and pranayama, but reduces their multiple and elaborate forms in each case to one simplest and most directly effective process sufficient for its own immediate object. Thus it gets rid of the Hatha yogic complexity and cumbrousness while it utilizes the swift and powerful efficacy of its methods for the control of the body and the vital functions and for the awakening of that internal dynamism full of a latent supernormal faculty typified in yogic terminology by the kundalini, the coiled and sleeping serpent of energy within. This done, the system proceeds to the perfect quieting of the restless mind and its elevation to a higher plane through concentration of mental force by the successive stages which lead to the utmost inner concentration or ingathered state of the consciousness, which is called samadhi. I'm just wondering if this isn't also linked to meditation practices, although I imagine meditation could be also associated with other forms of yoga, but I don't know if you have any comments about meditation in relation to the different yogas.
I think more or less every yoga uses meditation in one form or another. And Hatha Yoga may use it less. Raja Yoga uses it much more. But meditation makes part of yoga. Otherwise, it's just, well, then we are back to the same thing that we said previously. It would reduce itself just to a gymnastic, not more. And for a lot of people, it is only a gymnastic, but that's not yoga, it's gymnastic. Whereas some practice of meditation, an idea where it comes from. And there is obviously also the spiritual aspect, and that many people don't want. So it may be also that in the West we have a lot of classes. That's why I never attended them. The reason why I never went there. But maybe in the West we have a lot of classes which offer only the Hatha Yoga in its purely physical form. But in India you can see that also the Hatha Yogis use meditation. It is quite common thing.
So it seems that the silent mind is required for all forms of spiritual progress. Without a quiet mind, I am not in touch with neither myself nor the universal nor anything beyond the chatter in my mind. So it is an essential ingredient of the entire path, whichever way you roll.
There's some beautiful passages in Savitri, Jeffrey. When we get to them, we'll make sure that we highlight them, of the uncoiling of the serpent and it touching all the different chakras. There's some beautiful meditation. I see these passages in Savitri as meditations that Sri Aurobindo has left us for the practice of this action for having the so-called serpent, the Kundalini energy, activating our body. I'm sure Andrea and Marco know the passages also. They're gorgeous and useful.
Okay. By samadhi, in which the mind acquires the capacity of withdrawing from its limited waking activities into freer and higher states of consciousness, Raja Yoga serves a double purpose. It compasses a pure mental action liberated from the confusions of the outer consciousness and passes thence to the higher supramental planes on which the individual soul enters in its true spiritual existence. But also it acquires the capacity of that free and concentrated energizing of consciousness on its object, which our philosophy asserts as the primary cosmic energy and the method of divine action upon the world. By this capacity, the yogin already possessed of the highest supracosmic knowledge and experience in the state of trance is able in the waking state to acquire directly whatever knowledge and exercise, whatever mastery may be useful or necessary to his activities in the objective world. For the ancient system of Raja Yoga aimed not only at Swarajya, self-rule or subjective empire, the entire control of the subjective consciousness of all the states and activities proper to its own domain, but included Samraja as well, outward empire, the control by the subjective consciousness of its outer activities and environment.
So would you mind reading the whole paragraph again, Andrea? I got lost halfway.
By samadhi, in which the mind acquires the capacity of withdrawing from its limited waking activities into freer and higher states of consciousness, Raja Yoga serves a double purpose. It compasses a pure mental action liberated from the confusions of the outer consciousness and passes thence to the higher supramental planes on which the individual soul enters into its true spiritual existence. But also it acquires the capacity of that free and concentrated energizing of consciousness on its object, which our philosophy asserts as the primary cosmic energy and the method of the divine action upon the world. By this capacity, the yogin, already possessed of the highest supracosmic knowledge and experience in the state of trance, is able in the waking state to acquire directly whatever knowledge and exercise, whatever mastery may be useful or necessary to his activities in the objective world. For the ancient system of Raja Yoga aimed not only at Swarajya, self-rule or subjective empire, the entire control by the subjective consciousness of all the states and activities proper to its own domain, but included Samraja as well, outward empire, the control by the subjective consciousness of its outer activities and environment. So I'm finding this quite a leap all of a sudden into samadhi from these different yogas, from the Raja Yoga into samadhi. That is a little startling to me. All of a sudden you practice that and now you can be in samadhi and transcend everything. Wow.
Well, I mean, he's summarizing the whole of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, where there's the foundation is laid based on concentration and its spiritual use. There's only four books to the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali: concentration and its spiritual use, concentration and its practice, And then the third book is all the cities that develop from that, the powers that develop from that, and samadhi is part of it. And then the third book is like steeping us in swaraja, and then the fourth book is independence, which is basically becoming the divine actor, the samraja, this control of outer circumstances. And so it's you're feeling this awkward jump because he's summarizing an entire system of yoga in a couple of paragraphs.
And he goes
much deeper into samadhi later on. There's a whole chapter in the yoga, I think the Yoga of Divine Knowledge, on samadhi. I might be wrong about that, but I think it's in there.
The Raja Yoga is what one sees in Akrapati in savagery. Then the link to samadhi seems to me built into the thing somehow, right?
No, just a couple of things. Andrea wasn't making a jump calling the yoga of the king the Raja Yoga, because that's what it literally means. But here he's talking not about Ashwapati and Savitri and what and the book of the traveler of the worlds. He's specifically talking about Raja Yoga as practiced from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. So it's, yeah, I'm just going to try to separate that out a bit to say what he's addressing directly right here. Isn't that, but Andrea is perfectly correct about the, about Raja Yoga being the yoga of the king. Raja is king. And then Sri Aurobindo, there's an intentionality in naming those two cantos, the yoga of the king.
So we're coming up to the 90 minute point, Matthew.
Good place to break.
And I think we're about halfway through the text, or slightly over, anyway, roughly.
So do we, I don't know if we have time for that, I think not. Usually I think we go back and read through the whole thing, but I think that's too much for today.
I think we could start off next time by reading through to this point directly without stopping every few lines, and then we would do the next bit, right?
Yeah, see how far we get. Okay.
Could we end with a meditation together? Thanks for being more mindful of time than I was being. Thanks, Jeffrey. Thank you, friends. Lovely being with you all.
Always a pleasure.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Sri Aurobindo.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mother.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Take care, friends.